news, information, opinions, history, and most importantly, always real. This is Rant EM Radio.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents
the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast
with your hosts,
the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, well, no, we'll use potty mouth, but your new symbolized excellence, whatever the hell it is, from the current to the way back, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, and I am joined by
the easy, breezy, beautiful Mega Powers.
That's right, we are. Dave, we are what?
We're the Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
Oh, but what are we right now? We're what?
Wait, what are we right now?
We're live, Dave. Tell them we're live.
Oh, we're live.
There you go. Live, rantemradio.com. We are a Shining Wizards Network production. It is Wednesday night. It is, was it May 21st already? Just moving along here.
We're springing into spring, as they say.
Yeah, springing along. Tag Team Showcase Month is almost coming to a close. We have a great show lined up for you tonight. Before we get into any news or our kick-ass throwback tonight, a couple of our brothers are under the weather. Like, I want to give a shout-out to Shining Wizards, Matt. He's pretty sick, actually.
What happened to him?
He's got, like, strep and some other shit going on. I sent him some digital treats today. I gave him the War of the Worlds pay-per-view, which we'll cover in a few minutes.
Ooh.
And our buddy Snake not having a good time right now. So Snake and Shining Wizards Matt, get well. We miss you. And hope to see you guys in the chat room and hear from you soon. I know the Wizards had to cancel their show this week.
And yeah, I was looking forward to the Wayne Arnold episode from the Wonder Years.
Yeah, interesting. Ironically, I was listening to Eric Bischoff on Austin's podcast as he announced it, so it was pretty weird today. But all right. So, how was your week, first of all?
Week is going pretty good. Actually, obviously I got to go see the amazing War of the Worlds events, ROH, New Japan. And funny enough, the following day I got to work on a film set with the Boosaw Movement from PWS. A bunch of guys who were fans of Bonesaw, but they're not fans of the gimmick.
Bonesaw is ready.
So yeah.
Apparently he's not anymore. He's the champ. All right, we'll get into the pay-per-view in a second. I actually, not only did I see the pay-per-view, but I saw the Iron Sheik documentary.
How was that?
Fantastic. I got a great copy of it. I watched it. It was really well done. I mean, you
it
as
looks
a,
well done.
You as a producer would really, really appreciate this.
Yeah.
I mean, they went in depth. The guys who take care of him really give a shit about him. His story is really intriguing. If you don't know about the Iron Sheik, you'll definitely know all about him now. it's not just him saying all this crazy shit and, you know, making you humble.
He's in a lot of pain now. He's very sick.
He's very sick. He's old and, you know, drug abuse and stuff like that. But you know what? It's not like he started doing drugs when he was in his 30s and 40s. He started doing drugs as a senior citizen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird like that. I mean, he had tragedy, he lost a daughter to murder. Really.
And they have Jimmy Snuka on the documentary,
I heard. Jimmy Snuka's on it, The Rock is on it, a few guys are on it. It's pretty cool, very interesting insight, stuff I never knew about him. From his country, from his stuff in Iran, from the stuff he did with Vern Gagne.
Yeah, he used to be a very, like, agile performer. He used to be able to do leapfrogs and all that other kind of, you know, high-risk kind of movements. And unlike the person that we saw in the WWF.
Yeah, you know what? Even in the WWF, I mean, he was more gimmicky at that point by the time he got to the WWF in the mid-80s. But he still was well-respected at that point. He had been in the business almost 10 years at that point. But yeah, if you have a chance to see it, you can actually download it from their site or get a torrent, whatever. That's how I did it. So hold on a second. I think I see somebody in the chat room. I think Scott's in the chat room. So let's say hello to Scott, shall we?
Scott!
All right. So let's get in.
Scott.
Let's get into some news. You and Pop.
Hey, everyone. This is Justin.
Oh, whoa. I don't want to hear from Justin yet. Oh, man. Fucking iTunes. All right. So let's get into the pay per view. You and Papa Powers had a good time, I assume.
Oh yeah, we had an incredible time over at the Hammerstein Ballroom. The place was packed to the rafters. It was sold out. Awesome fucking show. The crowd was alive for every single match.
Crowd was insane. I actually worked Saturday afternoon for a couple hours. I made it home in time for the pay per view. I was stoked. Empty house, snacks, the whole nine yards. Great night. Now, You know the knock on Ring of Honor. You know, it's spot, 17 finishes, kick out, and then,
yeah.
You know, okay. After 7 minutes, people start chanting, this is awesome, no matter what match it is. Okay,
yeah.
I get it. Very entertaining, though, when you go, anytime they come to New York for some reason, they're entertaining.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, they announced today, tickets go on sale Friday. I'm buying my tickets on Friday. They'll be in Brooklyn at MCU Park where the Cyclones play the minor league Mets. August 15th, it's a base brawl. Field of Honor, they're calling it. The stadium seats about 10,000. TNA almost drew 1,000 when I went. I think Ring of Honor is going to do a little more than that. They have a really good following, and it's an outdoor stadium. It's Coney Island. It's going to be insane. I am so stoked. I'm putting in for my day off tomorrow if I can't get if I don't even know what day it is on the calendar. I don't care.
Yeah.
That's going to be a happening. I'm sure Dave would want to go. We're all going to be there. Maybe we'll do a group thing if anybody locally wants to come hang with us.
It's a great spot for wrestling. I was there for the first TNA event that they had there. And it's a great location in Coney Island. You're by the friggin' Wonder Wheel. The Warriors are there. Baseball Furies hopefully won't be there. It's going to be awesome.
Right. So let's get into the card from Saturday. Ring of Honor, New Japan Pro Wrestling, War of the Worlds from the Hammerstein Ballroom. I don't have the attendance, but it was sold out. And I think they hold... see today. I think they hold like 1,500. I'm not sure. If anybody can correct me in the chat room, I don't remember. But it was sold out.
Yeah.
Your pre-match was Caprice Coleman defeating Adam Page, subbing for Silas Young, who comes out in the pay-per-view later. He hit him with the Sky Splitter. Decent match. And I tell you,
it was a pre-show. It's just, you know, just an okay match. Something to get people warmed up.
Yeah, and the Ustream feed was great, man.
Really? It came out perfectly clear?
Came out
all that?
Perfect. I even watched like maybe an hour of the replay before I passed out. So fantastic. And they're going on pay-per-view, real pay-per-view next month for Best
Again?
Of the, yeah. June 20-something. They're doing their very first pay-per-view.
Wow.
Recent, you know. All right. Then there's an in-ring segment with AJ Styles. He's fighting... Supposed to be fighting Michael Elgin on Breakable.
Yeah, he was supposed to be fighting Elgin. I think Okada was supposed to go against Caprice Coleman or somebody. Like it was kind of like a mismatch or whatever. But they had the interview in the ring. Everybody was in there. Bullet Club, Okada with Gato and Mike Elgin were in there, and it was proposed for a three-way dance.
Yeah, so it was proposed. Nigel McGuinness, the matchmaker, comes out and makes the match, so your main event will be AJ Styles versus Okada versus Michael Elgin for the IWGP title.
Well, I think they had the president of New Japan at the desk.
Well, they mentioned his approval, and then he came out and said, okay, you guys have the match, you know.
Yeah.
So, all right, your first match, though, your first real match, ACH, Matt Taven and Tommaso Ciampa defeating one of my favorite tag teams right now in the last couple of years, the Forever Hooligans, Kozlov and Romero, and Taki Watanabe. Watanabe is solid, man. He's getting some good praise over New Japan from what I was reading. But I got to see him like in, you know, in the States now. And I saw him in New Japan, but he's good, man. He's solid. I like him.
Well, if they brought him over for the U.S. show, then, you know, that's saying something right there.
Yeah.
So, I can't really remember him offhand, just from watching just way too much wrestling.
Right.
But, you know, if they're putting him together with Forever Hooligans, they're huge over in Japan.
They are.
That's a big deal. And ACH, Taven, and Ciampa ended up getting the win.
Yeah,
I don't a lot of this stuff. Like after being at the event, I hardly remember anything. But
the crowd was rocking. Every time they rocked, I was like, I know Dave's having a blast.
Yeah.
Taven hit Watanabe with the climax. Your next match was the Decade, who are BJ Whitmer and Roderick Strong, who recently turned heel, with Jimmy Jacobs and Adam Page. They defeat the legendary Gedo and Jado. Love Gedo and Jado. They've been around for almost 20 years, these guys. When they pinned Gedo with the Death by Roderick.
Gedo and Jado.
Yeah. They hit him with the, what do you call it? It's called the Death by Roderick. The Larry. It's like a sick combo, a lariat.
It was Larry into a backbreaker.
Yeah, sick, sick, sick.
Yeah.
Cedric Alexander comes running out because he got attacked by the Decade not too long ago in storyline. So far, not crazy, not a lot of crazy, except for the ACH match, but not a lot of crazy high spots and 17 million kickouts. So,
no.
You could tell, like, this was a hybrid strong-style Ring of Honor card.
Well, you know, they got the New Japan guys over there, and I'm sure a lot of these guys that, you know, primarily work in ROH, they want to make a good impression, so hopefully they get picked, you know, to work over there.
Right. Your next match was the television championship match. Jay Lethal, now heel, with Truth Martini. How awesome is Truth Martini? I love that gimmick with the book.
He's the best.
He is.
I've been a fan of his since he did the Totally Tool wrestling event where he was fake Razor Ramon.
Pretty cool. They defeat Kushida, who's one half of the Time Splitters, I believe, with Alex Shelley.
Yes.
Of course, Jay hits the Lethal Injection. I don't mind Jay Lethal as a heel. I like Jay Lethal, period. So that was a good match. Every match.
Well, the guy's got to do something with his gimmick because, quite frankly, I hardly know what the hell's going on with the guy because since he's, you know, hasn't been in TNA and hasn't been doing Black Machismo, I really don't know what's going on with the guy. And he is, you know, pretty vanilla dude, even though he does have a personality and such, but he's just one of those guys who really hasn't, you know, kind of figured out his place in wrestling, in my opinion.
No, and I'm glad you brought that up because I was about to say before you spoke on it that Jay Lethal is one of those guys that is so good, and like Dave mentioned, he's vanilla and he gets lost in the shuffle a lot.
A black vanilla guy. Who would have thought?
Yeah, it's always a race thing. I don't know.
Yeah, but he's the dude has talent. He's got a personality, but you know the right gimmick has never really come wrong, with the exception of Black Machismo. But then you know he's just ripping off Macho Man's gimmick. So you know that's.
But
not
he's
really
a talent. He's a talent. I mean, he's good. He's solid. He's solid in the ring. Always. I saw him a bunch of indie shows. TNA, I mean, he's good. I like him. I dig Jay Lethal.
Yeah, if you see him on the card, you're guaranteed, like, an awesome match. But just for whatever reason, the guy really hasn't broken out of, you know, that mid-card spot, even if, you know, even with a television strap around his waist.
Love the fact that Kevin Kelly and doing commentary with Steve Corino, who was fantastic on the stick. I have to send you this clip.
I got to see the event, the pay-per-view version of the event.
Dave, I'm telling you, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on a Ring of Honor high right now, but Corino is so, and he, I even tweeted him, and he wrote back to us that he, I told him he was great on a stick, yo. He was fantastic. Mm. I thought him and Kevin Kelly did a good job with calling these matches. Your next match was the IWGP Tag Team Championship. Doc Gallows, what do they call him? Doc Gallows and the Machine Gun, Carl Anderson from the Bullet Club, defeat the Briscoes to retain the titles. Decent match. Briscoe's been in Japan for, they go to Japan a lot, so they go with the strong style.
Yeah.
And I told you I'm a big fan of Carl Anderson. The match was decent. They hit Mark with the Magic Killer. So it wasn't a bad match. It wasn't a bad match. It was it was the perfect time. What, they didn't stretch it. They didn't go over like 10 minutes. You know what I'm saying? It was really, really good.
Well, technically it was 10 minutes and 40 seconds, so.
Yeah, but I mean,
They kept a great pace to it. You know, everybody got a chance to display, you know, their wares, and plenty of brawling too, and just a fucking solid match.
Yeah. All right, your next match was the IWGP Intercontinental Championship match.
No, the belt was not on the line.
Oh, it wasn't? I apologize. I stand corrected.
No, this is just a non-title match.
So this was a exhibition between the King of Strong Style, apparently. He calls himself Shinsuke Nakamura. Is it? I have this written down wrong, and I apologize. Well, Nakamura.
Well, the U is silent a lot of the times.
Okay. See, you have to correct me on these things. I am not.
That's why I'm here, man.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. But I'm getting better at my Japanese, though.
Actually, you're getting worse. I've had to correct you more times on this episode than previous episodes, so you're getting worse.
I'm sorry. It won't happen again. Nakamura defeats Kevin Steen.
Steen.
With the two. What's his finisher? The Bomaye?
Kind of like the Ali, you know, like Muhammad Ali.
The Bomaye, okay. Because they were chanting that, and I didn't. And I wanted to make
I think
sure.
It was more of a. Because there was.
He hit
there
two
was a
of
while
them.
Back, like several years ago, Nakamura was challenging Antonio Inoki. And Inoki also had the Bomaye kind of like chant, you
right.
know, with fans.
Right.
So I think that was kind of like a knock off of Inoki as opposed to Muhammad Ali or any of that.
Well, the self-professed King of Strong Style defeats Kevin Steen with two Bomayes.
He fucking kicked out at one.
I know.
For the first one.
I know. So there was the first glimpse of Ring of Honor right there.
But I got to admit, it was done well because nobody was expecting that one count. On it, because usually when people get hit with the Bomaye, they're done. That's it. But he hit him with like a wild one. Like he jumped up and hit him in the face with one, and that got the three.
Yeah.
But good thing it wasn't like three of them, or four of them, or five of them, or any shit like that.
Sorry about that, bro. Keep talking for a second. I gotta step away for a second.
Okay, he's stepping away.
Yeah, talk about the match for a second.
Yeah, so afterwards, Steen is pretty much teasing that he's going to be leaving Ring of Honor. I don't know completely what's going on with him. I guess he's going to NXT. I have to look into that a bit further, but it's understood that he's going to be leaving ROH soon. The fans were anticipating it. He was going into this speech that, hey, he's done as much as he can. He's lost his last several matches. And he thinks that his time is up in Ring of Honor. So
sorry about that. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's okay. So he's given a big speech that he's ready to leave ROH. And who was the person that came out that stopped him from like during his big speech? Because I rarely watch Ring of Honor, and I don't know who all the guys are.
So afterwards, Steen. Teased stepping away from Ring of Honor, but Silas Young is who you're speaking of, came out
yes.
and ripped on Steen and his family, leading to a pull-apart brawl. There's a big rumor going around that Steen's been offered a developmental contract from WWE. I don't know how true it is. I don't know. I mean, I just started watching his documentary. I just downloaded it.
He has a documentary, too?
It just came out with Ring of Honor. It's one of the what's it called? It's called, I'm going to tell you right now what it's called. I have it on my desktop right now. It's called Kevin Steen Hell Rising.
It's documentary.
Yeah, it's documentary to a bunch of his best matches.
Is this like the WWE documentary?
Yeah, no, he sits down. It's almost like a shoot.
Okay.
He talks about Cornette in length. the first like 40 minutes of the I'm in the first 40 minutes of like the first disc.
Oh God, I got to see this.
Yeah, it's really good. I just got a good copy of it. Yeah, and he goes in on Cornette like big time.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's good. It's good so far. So, all right, your next match, Hiroshi Tanahashi defeats Mike Bennett with the high fly flow.
Yeah, he hit him one with one on the outside of the ring too during the match.
Sick. That was the sickest. And you know what? Bennett does get his pile driver in after Maria distracts the referee.
Now, yes.
Now you all know Michael Bennett's not allowed to use his pile driver because he lost that pile driver match to Steen. The match was good. Tanahashi, man. So him.
He's the ace of New Japan. Whether he has the world title around his waist, or I mean the heavyweight title, or the IWGP Intercontinental title, or no belt at all, the man's fucking gold. He's their ace. You know, he's the number. He's the big cheese over in New Japan.
I don't want to make the comparison in terms of wrestling style, but. In popularity, is he like the John Cena of New Japan?
Yeah, I guess you could say for now.
Like he'd be on the cereal boxes, he'd go to the Make-A-Wish Japan kids and all that stuff?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, all right, that's what I thought. Okay. Red Dragon. I love Red Dragon. Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly.
Is that how it's pronounced? Red Dragon?
Red Dragon, yes.
Okay.
Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly, fantastic. They fought the Hooligans when I went to the last ROH car last summer. With UFC fighter Filthy Tom Lawler against the Young Bucks. We love the Young Bucks, who also retweeted our messages from Ring of Honor the other night. Good guys. Shout out to Matt and Nick. They're in the Bullet Club as well. The Young Bucks were the tag team champions of ROH, and they were also the IWGP. They are the IWGP junior tag team champions.
Correct.
But Red Dragon does retain the titles.
And for me, this was the match of the night. And judging by the crowd's reaction, it was the crowd's choice for the night. Because it was just – this is where all the crazy high spots and false finishes were being busted out. And it worked perfectly for this. Like everything that they did was – like the fans were eating out of their hands. It was insane.
Yep, hands down. My favorite – I mean – Steen and Nakamura was my favorite match until this one. This was also my favorite match up to this point. Matt, what do you call it? They regained the titles when O'Reilly submitted Matt with the Armageddon. They used arm as capital ARM.
Yes.
yeah. All right. So your next match was, I had my reservations about this.
Uh huh.
Because Jushin Thunder Liger, I don't think, has had a day's rest in about 6 months. This guy's been all over the world.
The guy's nonstop. The man's 49 years old, and he wrestles like he's in his 20s.
49 years old, made his pro debut in 1984. The man is iconic in Japan. He has his own cartoon. He has his own line of everything out there. He fights world champion of Ring of Honor, Mr. Adam Cole. Good match. Solid. Of course,
Shocking ending.
Yeah, figure four. Hit him with a figure four. Nothing crazy.
He defeated and made submit the legendary Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah, in the middle of the ring with a figure four leg lock.
He worked the leg. He worked the leg well during the match. Liger was selling the knee, and nobody expected it. Nobody saw this coming whatsoever. And I know a lot from what I could tell in the audience, a lot of fans were kind of disappointed. But, for all the crazy matches that we've seen up to this point, it totally made sense for them to do something like this. It was completely different than everything else that was going on that evening. And it completely sticks out. Whether it's your style or not, doesn't matter. These guys had a great match with a unique ending that nobody saw coming. So there you go. And everybody hit their finishing moves, of course, and kicked out.
yeah, this was just the start of the typical Ring of Honor stuff.
Yeah, but at least it was happening, like, late in the card.
Yeah, it wasn't.
I have not been keeping up with the Ring of Honor, but from what I could tell from what other people are telling me is that it happens throughout the entire card, which is a no-no.
Yeah.
But, this was not my impression for this evening.
This was hands down, the next to WrestleMania, the best pay-per-view of the year so far.
Hell yeah.
And it wasn't like he hit the figure four, and I was going to get back to Liger real quick. He actually was in California the next day at a Lucha show that our friend Kristen from California posted pictures on our Facebook page. So it wasn't like Liger was hurt or anything. He legit was just hit him with a figure four, and it was, you know, that was it.
Yeah, next day, California, wrestling another match.
So your next match was the main event of the evening. Your IWGP champion, AJ Styles of the Bullet Club, defeats Michael Elgin and Okada with Gato in his corner to retain the title when he pinned Elgin with the Styles Clash after sending Okada to the outside when Okada had hit Elgin with the Rainmaker.
Yeah, that was cool to see. It was one of those kind of matches where it could have gone either way. It could have gone with any guy. Well, maybe not Elgin. But if Okada won the IWGP Heavyweight Championship at Ring of Honor, it wouldn't be too far-fetched because I know they're having a rematch very soon in Japan.
Yes.
So we'll see how that goes. But it was one of those kind of matches where how can I word it? It's just like evenly matched. You know, Elgin is definitely in line for the Ring of Honor World Championship. There's no doubt about that in my mind. AJ Styles is a fresh IWGP Heavyweight Champion, but, you know, it wouldn't be shocking if Okada took the belt back. He's already done it twice to Tanahashi, if I remember correctly. And but regardless, it was a fantastic match. Great three-way.
Agreed. Afterwards, Adam Cole runs out, lays all three guys out with the belt. That thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Adam Cole is such a heel. Like, I didn't think he could pull it off when he first turned heel. But he's fit into the role nicely. The credits roll, and at the end of the show, the Best of the World pay-per-view debuts on pay-per-view for June 22nd, announcing Adam Cole versus Michael Elgin, like Dave mentioned before, for the world title. Then showing a returning Christopher Daniels.
Yeah, he's going to be back.
With Kazarian. So Bad Influence now, yet another solid tag team that TNA gave up on. So TNA gets the Wolves, but they let Bad Influence go. I don't
TNA understand. Has been persistent with dropping the ball.
Yeah.
So it's sadly. But it's good to know that these guys are going to be back in a place that, you know, they're well received, they're well respected, and they'll get to, you know, show their wares the best way that they can.
All right, I'm just clicking back to the chat room. Thank you, Scott. Hammerstein Ballroom sits 2,500 and 2,000 for wrestling events. So did your dad have a good time? Did he enjoy it?
Oh yeah, he had an awesome time. He's becoming a Steen fan.
Good for him. Good.
Yeah,
I love Kevin Steen, man.
Yeah, he was really into his thing, especially when they were separating him and the other guy whose name I forgot again. But like, he leaped off of the top rope onto him and all the security, and it was so fucking cool.
All right, let's get into a couple news items. Then we got some Facebook questions. Take a quick break, and then we'll get into our kick-ass throwback of the evening.
Yeah.
All right. So apparently everybody's a stock market expert on Facebook.
Yeah, which I find funny because it's kind of like they're just reading the material that's in the fucking
dirt sheets,
articles in the dirt sheets, and it's kind of like, well, there's a lot more to it than that.
I'm not a stock person. I have an uncle who. Sold his he. My uncle was pretty wealthy, and my uncle at one point decided he wanted to do something else with his life and sold his very lucrative car business. And how he made his money was he kept his hobby, which was like producing movies and stuff like that. And he was a day trader, and he would trade stocks all day. He'd go on his computer, take his money, invest it, sell it, do this, that, and this happened every single day for a couple of years until he. Realized that this wasn't going to make him any money. He went back into the business and whatever. But for the few times I sat with him, he tried to explain to me how it works. And right away, people on Facebook, friends of ours too, it's like, oh, yeah, look at this now. The network ain't selling, so look. The market's going to – look. And I know I got into with Mike Norgonger with the Midnight Jury. He was comparing it to the failure of the XFL and the,
Yeah, that's a little too far-fetched in my
opinion. Was, and I'm going to tell you why. Every Fortune 500 business does this. They go out of their way to do stuff that's not in their realm of what they do. Case in point, Donald Trump, one of the best real estate entrepreneurs on the planet for the last 30 years.
Who's constantly going bankrupt and becoming rich again and again.
Right, because what he does is he sells properties, he sells his stock and buys them back and sells them and buys them and flips them and buys them. He tried to start a football league. Didn't work. He's still a millionaire.
Yeah,
Ted Turner decided to make wrestling on a bigger platform. While he did that, he merged with Time Warner AOL. Look what happened there.
Yeah.
I don't know, Bill Gates with Windows XP, not so much. You know, when the Xbox 360 first launched, the stocks took a dive. This happens. So what? Vince McMahon is in a billion. He lost $300,000.
Still has another $600 million.
Here's the deal. Not that I'm defending a millionaire, but you know, Vince is the only game right now. He has no competition. First of all,
yeah.
Okay. Second of all, he monopolized the business, and then Mike got into it with me on Facebook about, well, you know, his products are unwatchable. It's saturated because they're not to our fan base anymore. He's not catering to us anymore. He's catering to children. It's an entertainment now. It's not a sport. It's not when we were kids growing up. If you get into 40% of it, get fine, whatever. And this is not just Mike. There's a whole bunch of people on Facebook. It's like, oh, look at this. Stephanie sold her stocks. You know why Stephanie sold her stocks? Because she wanted to. She has more stock. She sold some of it. Big deal. This is what these guys, they sell their own stock all the time. This happens. It's a regular occurrence. But everybody's a fucking stock market expert because it's on dirt sheets.
Yeah.
You know? So, oh, well.
Because they know better.
Right. So there's 700 buys of the network. And thank God you came on Facebook yesterday and you mentioned no other market has it. Canada doesn't have it. Europe doesn't have it. Once they have it, you know, they knew this was going to happen. They knew it because, you know, every digital streaming is the wave of the future. Digital streaming is how we're all going to watch television eventually. Pretty soon you're not going to have DVDs, you're not going to have Blu-ray. It's all digital now. You can stream almost anything. It's the wave of the future.
We're streaming pay-per-views from New Japan. We're streaming pay-per-views of Ring of Honor.
And
even those aren't very successful, but it's not stopping these companies from, you know, still putting them out. It's not stopping these companies from touring and all this other kind of stuff. It's just how it works when you're in business, you know, regardless of what it is. You're going to have times where something doesn't work out, and you're going to have to figure out a way to rebound, and that's it.
You know, you have to know something too. You know, when you own your company and you go public in stock in the market, you know, so what? I mean, you're going to lose money all the time. First of all, he bounced back like the next day. As of Monday, he bounced back.
Yeah.
You know, or Tuesday, I forget what it was.
Nobody's really talking about that.
No, you know why? Because they don't know. They're all fucking sitting behind their computer going, "No, look at you, Vince. Stephanie sold." And then, like, there's a big investigation because Stephanie sold her stock and there's some inside trading. Inside trading where? Where? They don't. First of all, when they lose big. Why? Because they're their own company. It's not like TNA where TNA's backed by fucking Panda and they're bleeding money.
Yeah.
TNA loses millions. Since the Carters and Panda have gotten into TNA, they bleed money every single year. Okay? They bleed money every single year. Okay? When Paul Heyman bled money, he went bankrupt. Okay? When Smoky Mountain bled money, they went bankrupt. Okay? There's a bunch of stuff going on. Okay? Bunch of stuff going on. Shout out to William Morgan. He's listening to the show at work. Will does the wrestling call-in show on Saturdays on the Rant. So shout out to Will. Just sent me a message on Facebook on my phone actually because I can't. Every time I open Facebook here, I get the noises. So
yeah.
But the bottom line is though, it's get your facts straight. I'm not a trader. I don't know anything about the – I know enough about the stock market to know that Vince is the smartest dude on the planet. Smartest dude on the planet. Why? Because he knew going digital. Same thing with Netflix. Netflix had the same problem. Nobody's gonna stream movies. They're all just going to rent DVDs. Yeah? Within 2 years, I don't even get DVDs from Netflix anymore.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's the bottom line.
It's like one of those kind of things where, what's it? There's even a time where Netflix was I think they cut off a lot of their DVD users and kind of separate. Kind of like we're trying to steer people more towards streaming, and there's a lot of resistance because people wanted the DVDs, and they lost a lot of money too. But they're still here. They're still prosperous. And I'm pretty sure the WWE is going to be around for a long time. I don't know about TNA, but...
You know what? It's not... And I'm not shitting on TNA. I enjoy TNA. I do. To the point where I'm actually going to the event next month, I think. But the thing is, with these people on the internet, man, read your facts. Don't just pick up a dirt sheet and be like, oh, Stephanie sold her stock and there's a conspiracy. Vince is going to go bankrupt. They're not going to go bankrupt. They're fucking
We need to get Jesse Ventura on this case. He knows all about conspiracies.
Yeah, but that's the thing. They're not going to go bankrupt. Dude, they're global. This digital platform is going to I told Mike yesterday. I was telling Mike on Facebook yesterday. Vince can walk away right now and take his digital content that his library that he bought from all the territories. He could be the next Rob Feinstein on a bigger scale.
Yeah, he could make money off of that, period.
He could walk away right now, and he could sell WWE right now and, like, just bank on the friggin' and get a distributor and just bank on that and bank on the videos. You see all the territories he bought? He owns Smoky Mountain, ECW, WCW, NWA Mid-Atlantic. He's about to own Puerto Rico. Dude,
does he own AWA? Waller's stuff?
No, he doesn't own Memphis yet. He's got the AWA. He's got World Class. Dude, come on, bro. I just mentioned 7 or 8 promotions. Huge promotions that were regional
made a difference for what would become the WWF and WWE. You know, all the places that Vince Cherry picked the cream of the crop talent.
And you know what? And Don Tony mentioned this on his show the other night. Wrestling fans aren't the richest people. You've seen the people that go to these shows.
Yeah, they're the most hood rich people, though.
And they don't want to buy nothing either. They're cheap. Wrestling fans are cheap, except for me, who invests a third of my life into this shit.
Yeah.
No matter where in my life I was, I invested my time and money in wrestling. But you've seen the people that show up to these shows. They don't want to pay for nothing. Wrestling fans don't want to pay for nothing. And still, Vince makes money off the kids. And he caters to a different audience.
Yeah.
So if you're a fan, you're not a fan of the current product, I understand. A lot of us aren't fans of the current product. 40% of it is watchable. Okay? Speaking of 40%, the 40% we do watch, Daniel Bryan's going to be out a while. Surgery was successful. They're saying a couple of weeks. I'm hearing a couple of months. I don't know exactly. There's like 17 different reports. He's supposed to be on Raw next week.
To possibly surrender the title.
Again, I feel bad for the guy.
Well, that's the whole point. You know, the guys and Jim Ross brought this up on his show. You know, it's one of those kind of moments where, you know, even though there's a lot of bad stuff that's happening to him, it's a perfect way to capitalize on still making him popular. You know, his father passed recently. The guy's neck is injured. He's going into surgery. The man just got married. He had the biggest, greatest moment of his career at WrestleMania.
But every time he gets a championship, something bad happens to him. He gets put in shitty storylines. Look at when he was the World Heavyweight Champion. He had to fight Mark Henry and Big Show for like a fucking half a year. Terrible. Yeah. Terrible. All right. Paul Heyman DVD's coming out August 5th. Yay. I'm stoked about this. Very, very.
I don't know what's going to be on there, but it's going to be all sorts of awesome.
I'm taking that week off on my birthday. My birthday's the day before, so I'm taking that week off, and that's one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to go and pick that up and watch that intensely. I can't wait. I can't wait. CM Punk was at a Cubs game a couple days ago, announced that him and AJ Lee get married next month. Good for him.
Ooh.
Velvet Sky was on Boomer and Carton this morning locally. It's a sports show. Let's see. And speaking of TNA, Eric Young is going to be hosting Monster Week on Animal Planet. I just wrote that to be silly. Speaking of TNA, David Richards is also engaged. And he has an interesting story about TNA.
What's that?
Senior audio producer Jason Seaman, he said Seaman, resigned from the company on Monday, this past Monday. Seaman had been with the company for around 8 years. His departure comes as a shock for a lot of people within the company, as Seaman was a well-liked and considered one of the hardest-working employees of the production crew. Apparently, production people are not happy with the direction of the company.
No, and isn't there some issue with their with them getting paid too?
Yes, a couple of guys, not as bad as Paul Lee, but it was
some dudes are getting stiffed on their checks.
Right, right, right. So I listen. The Hammerstein shows are going to be, for me anyway, are the selling points.
When are they? When are those shows again?
The 25th, 26th, 27th of June.
Okay.
I'm probably going to go to the Wednesday show, so we're probably going to take a night off from the show. I have a best of all propped up. I'm going. Yeah, I'm taking a night
off. Well, hey, if they're doing those BOGO tickets, you grab one for me, and then I'll spot half.
Okay, so you know, Dave and I will take the night off, and we're going to go. I honestly want you there too, because I want to see if they can come correct at these shows. And sell their product.
I would love to see that.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think for some reason, I think if they're going to turn around the company, it's going to be this next coming month in New York.
Mm.
This is where they have to come correct. If you can get over in this market and, you know, do that and come out with flying colors and sell your product to Spike again, then maybe, hopefully, we'll get some more captivating television out of these guys. They have glimpse of good shit. They have to come correct.
They got great talent. It's just
they have great talent.
I don't know what to say. It's the storylines. It's, you know, how people are showing up. It's a lot of things. It's I'm just curious how the fans are going to treat them at the Hammerstein Ballroom, because there was a big long fuck TNA chant happening at Ring of Honor past Saturday.
You know what, dude? Fuck Ring of Honor fans. Because you know what? It's a lot of these guys and girls are like, all they do is watch Ring of Honor. They don't watch anything else. So
fine, but I'm wondering, you know, just how wrestling fans are. You know, it doesn't matter what their allegiances are. A lot of them will go to the show anyway just to check it out. Because they, you know, we're fucking crack addicts. We need to have our wrestling fix.
So I don't put a lot of stock into the hardcore Ring of Honor fans because they don't watch anything else but that product.
Well, I wouldn't put it past a New York City crowd to turn on TNA at a TNA show.
Well, that's what I'm saying. New York fans are a bit. And all the Ring of Honor fans that come to the Hammerstein, they're all not from New York. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah,
but the other shows, most of the people are from New York. So when WWE comes to town, or when they did the Hammerstein, it was all New York people. When ECW did it, and you know that kind of thing. But
yeah,
if
now. I just want to throw this out there. Are these shows going to be on
TV? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
Okay.
I think they're filming one of them for a pay-per-view. I'm not sure. If anybody can correct me, I don't want to say they are and then they're not.
Pre-taped pay-per-view?
Yeah, probably. But you know what, though, dude? The venue is great. You've been there. I've been there. Honestly, I'll watch any wrestling there, to be honest with you.
And any seat there is
a good seat.
Perfectly fine, yeah.
So I mentioned about the Ring of Honor doing a Brooklyn Cyclones thing at MCU Park. On August 15th, it's been a packed event for TNA in recent years, like I mentioned. In 2010, they set a new TNA attendance record with under 5,500 fans. Now, I told you guys in the Shining Wizard that there were almost 2,000 people when I went last year, 4th of July weekend.
Mm.
So, again, TNA can draw, and I'm living proof at a baseball stadium, okay? So if TNA can draw 1,000 people or 2,000 people in a baseball stadium in Brooklyn, they can pack the fucking Hammerstein. And I'm being biased because of New York, but New York fans can come correct. And that's even Jersey people come correct to it.
Wrestling. This is a wrestling, state. We want to see wrestling. It doesn't matter what it is. WPW had a good 1,000 people there.
Yep, the tri-state area, from the Golden Era through the Attitude Era, even with the thin years in the early 2000s, the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, were a hotbed for professional wrestling because...
Still is.
Because it's where it was based.
Yeah, besides maybe California, there's always a wrestling show happening in Jersey.
Anyway. All right, yeah. Mr. Mega Powers, you got those Facebook questions up?
Yes, I do.
Let's do some Facebook questions. I'm going to take a quick break.
Going to hit you up with some Facebook questions.
Yeah, man.
Okay, we got some questions from Tank.
Of course.
He's asking another Hall of Fame question. If you were in the WWE Hall of Fame committee, would you put in the Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express, New Midnight Express into your Hall of Fame, and why? And does Jim Cornette go in as the manager or as his own entry or both?
You want to answer this first or you want me to go?
Yeah, I would certainly include Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express because, tonight, and I'm just going to say it right now, this is probably the greatest tag team feud of all time. This is just one of those, sets of teams that whenever they get together, it's always magic. And they've been fighting each other for over, it's been like almost 30 years that these guys have been like consistently having matches with each other. So whether it's together or separate, Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express, not the new Midnight Express, neither are the new Blackjacks going in there, nor are the new Rockers going in there. But the original Midnight Express, well, at least they got to have Bobby Eaton,
Stan Lane, Dennis Condrey. Loverboy Dennis Condrey and Sweet Stan Lane.
And Sweet Stan Lane, yeah.
Right. So, and
with Jim Cornette.
Jim Cornette should go in with them, and he should get two rings.
Yeah.
Two rings, period, because he was a manager of a couple of champions, and he did his thing.
He did more than this thing. He's still kicking.
Jim Cornette is one of the smartest people in the business, hands down. He revitalized a dead WWF product right before the Attitude Era. He ran a couple of promotions. He was a booker. He did a bunch of shit. To this day, if you listen to his podcast is awesome, by the way. It's on the MLW with the MLW guys. It's fucking hilarious. And awesome stuff. Jim Cornette is fantastic.
And a really nice guy, too.
Yeah, really nice guy. We got to see him at the Legends of the Ring. We'll probably see him again this year at the Legends of the Ring, which we'll be at in 2 weeks.
We got to get his ass on this show.
He has to come on the show. He mentioned he's not going to be doing much because he's getting worked on his home, according to his last podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can get him on the show.
We'll entice him.
Yeah, we should get that.
And I'm just the man to do it.
Yeah, you know what? We should do that. Try to get him. He would probably love our show, man. Because just to talk old shit, and shit. Anyway. All right, what's the next question?
All right, next question comes from, let me see, Samuel Elliott. So many classic feuds that Midnight Express has been in. What is your guys' favorite with these guys? Oh, duh, the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah, Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express. Midnight Express also had some great matches with the Four Horsemen and
Fantastics.
Oh, the Fantastics were they started that feud in another federation, and the Fantastics with them with Southeast Championship Wrestling, which I'll talk about in a little while. And the Rock and Roll Express had some really good matches with Manny Fernandez and Rick Rude. You have to understand something: Rock and Roll Express were multi-time World Tag Team Champions. They were two journeymen that got together, and I'll tell their story in a second. So it is what it is. All right, next question.
All right, let's see here. Okay, we got one from looks like several from Shay Marcel Campane. I believe that's how you pronounce it. There's always what-if questions, but my biggest one is, what if the MSG incident, Click embracing each other, hadn't happened? Also, I was recently watching Vengeance of 2003. It featured a tag title match between Mysterio and Kidman versus the world's greatest tag team, Haas and Shelton Benjamin. Any thoughts? I hardly remember that match, if I've even seen it. So I don't know what to say about that one. But as far as the MSG incident, what are your thoughts on that, Phil?
If it didn't happen, obviously Triple H wouldn't have gotten buried like he did, which, you know, which was arguably the best thing that happened to him, because he got buried, worked his way back up to the top, and earned the respect of everybody in the company.
Yeah, but what about Austin?
What about Austin?
Well, that King of the Ring that Austin won was the one that Triple H was slated to win. But because of the MSG incident, that didn't happen. And Austin went on to not only win the King of the Ring, but you know, get his catchphrase of Austin 316. So if he never won the King of the Ring tournament, well, not to say that there wasn't going to be that version of Stone Cold Steve Austin, but we wouldn't have Austin 316. And I'm sure maybe his run wouldn't have been what it is.
Yeah, I have no rebuttal for that. It's the truth. I mean,
yeah, like what if there was no Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin? What if it was Bret Hart versus Triple H?
Yeah, you know. And to answer the second question, I've been a fan of Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas for the longest. I loved Shelton Benjamin when he was the Minnesota Stretching Crew with Brock Lesnar in Ohio Valley. Ohio Valley Wrestling. That was the last batch of tapes I got for, you know, when I was still the early 2000s or whatever it was. And to be honest with you, Haas and Benjamin, Charlie Haas was an incredible talent. Those guys are awesome. The world's greatest tag team. They were in Ring of Honor for a while. So I'm a big fan of Shelton Benjamin. So, and Charlie Haas.
Yeah.
All right, next question.
Okay, Tony C has a great question. Did Bobby Eaton have the best mullet of the 80s and 90s?
Ooh. Wow. I mean,
that's a tough question.
That is a tough question. Good job.
You know, Sid had a good mullet. So did
Scott Steiner. Dan Spivey. Scott Steiner had a great mullet. Rick
Rude
had a
mullet.
I think
that distinction might have to go to Michael Hayes.
Michael Hayes had a decent mullet. Maybe.
He had he had a really nice mullet. It was like he went to the salon before the match.
Yeah, but so did Rick Rude. He had that permy, weavy, jivey thing going on for a while.
He had like a kind of like a Jerry curl going
on. Yeah, so let your soul glow, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Fucking Lionel Richie right there.
Oh, I was playing some Lionel Richie today, going through the old MP3s.
Funny, all man. Night long.
All night. All night. Anyway. Yeah, no, I that's a tough question. You know what? Bobby Eaton is up at least top five, right?
I would have to say top three.
Axel saying Demolition Crush. He had a sweet mullet.
Yeah, Crush did have a good mullet, especially when he was Kona Crush.
Johnny Ace had a mullet when he was with the Dynamic Dudes, him and fucking
yeah,
Shane Douglas.
Shane Douglas had a mullet.
Oh, my God. There was
One,
so
Two,
many...
Three Kid had a mullet.
Oh, yeah. Jesus, he had the mullet, too.
Yeah.
Sparky Plug had the mullet.
Eddie Guerrero had a mullet.
Eddie Guerrero had a mullet.
Even after mullets were cool.
Yeah, those Mexican guys, they never came, you know. Flair
it's
had
just like a normal haircut for them.
Yeah, Flair had a mullet. The guys, all those guys had mullets. Jesus. Top three,
Sweet
Bobby.
Sweet Stan Lane had a mullet.
Sweet Stan had a mullet. So Bobby Eaton's got to go top three, though.
Yeah, I'd have to say so.
Yeah. All right, next question.
Especially when he was in the Blue Bloods.
In the Blue Bloods.
Because he still had it.
Thank you, Tony C. That's a good question.
Yeah. Let's see what's the next one. All right. The last one is who would from Baza, our boy Baza, who would you put together today as a Midnight Rock and Roll Express combo?
Ooh. You know what? The Rock and Roll Express, people laugh at me, though, but I think Heath Slater is a talent. I think Heath Slater can pull it off. I don't know who I would pair him up with, though. I know Heath Slater would definitely fit that Rock and Roll Express gimmick.
Well,
he's halfway. Yeah, he's halfway there with the three-man band. I don't know. Dude, there's some certain things you just can't replicate, man.
Yeah, it's like me and you. We saw the Rock and Roll Express against the Briscoe Brothers.
Yeah, they beat the fucking Briscoes,
man. They beat the fucking Briscoe Brothers. Not only that, but they took charge of the match. And it was like watching them, like the match that we're going to be discussing tonight. Like, they hadn't, like, lost a step. they still got it. But at the same time, there's not really teams that have that kind of camaraderie, you know, with one another. Not saying that I would package random guys as the Midnight or Rock and Roll Express, but I think like the best teams right now that are they're fucking teams, they're tag teams. I'd say maybe like the Young Bucks and maybe Forever Hooligans. I don't know if they've even faced each other, but these are great tag teams. That are tag teams. They're not. They don't stray and do all these singles matches. They stick together as a tag team.
Yeah, and I don't,
and the Briscoes too.
Yeah, I don't think I have to agree with you, Dave. I hate to agree with you all the time, but but seriously, I mean, we disagree.
I ain't Tony here.
We disagree sometimes. Yeah. I don't think we can replicate that stuff, man.
But yeah, it's like it's again. You know, we say it so many times. Tag team wrestling is such a lost art. There's really like even Young Bucks, even Briscoes, as talented as they are, they're not really doing like the same. I don't want to say the same stuff, but they don't have the same mindset as a Rock and Roll Express or a Midnight Express. Like you know, knowing the rules of tag team wrestling, knowing the rules of a wrestling match and knowing how to follow the rules and knowing how to bend the rules when the ref isn't looking and all these other kind of things. It's, you know, just wrestling in general is becoming a lost art. It's just becoming, you know, what it is now, you know, and I think a lot has, you know, that comes on from ECW, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But, you know, just the idea of there not being any specific rules that are in the mind of the audience or the wrestlers, you know, whether it's a time limit or a five count or a 10 count on the outside or whatever, you know, it's all these kind of things that are just kind of slipping away. And it's like, you know, back in the day when I was watching wrestling, to me, it was always a contest. It wasn't a performance, even though we all know it's a performance, but it was just kind of like, well, who really is better, you know, this team or that team, or who's going to go on, you know, for a title match? And it's not really the case these days. It's just kind of like we're going to throw these guys together in a match, and there may be a story, there may not, and we're just going to keep moving along, and the belts don't mean shit.
It's a lost art form, like Dave mentioned. Also, you know, when, you know, we talked about the tag teams and the hot tags and the continuity and the style.
Yeah, there's not really many hot tags. It's just kind of like there's a tag and that's it.
Yeah, and a lot of these teams are thrown together. They're not. It's they're like generic almost. You know, they just come together for a cause. And I mean, it happened back then too. But you had genuine tag teams, and you had genuine tag teams that put guys. You know, that made guys superstars.
Yeah.
A lot of singles guys, you know, your Shawn Michaels, your Bret Harts, you know, that kind of thing.
But again, it's an ego thing these days. Not to say there weren't egos back then; there were equally as big egos then. But it's just that it's gotten to a point now where you know a decent tag team division can't really exist because there's not really guys who want to stick together. You know, whether it's for a year or 3 years or more. You know,
right. All right, let's mute the mics, take a quick break, and play some of our friends' plugs, and we'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen,
we'll be back.
We are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast live on The Rant. We are Shining Wizards Network production, and we'll be right back.
You're damn right.
Hey, everyone. This is Justin Anderson, one of your hosts from the Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast, where each week we break down the news in the world of geek culture, entertainment, professional wrestling, sports, and music. We also give our spin on the typical top 10 lists and fan cast our own movies. That's the Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast, available on iTunes, Stitcher, or download from inconclusivebreakdown.libsyn.com.
G'day folks, AJ here. When you finish listening to this fucking podcast, head on over to iTunes or Stitcher and check out myself, Lee and Punch on the fucking Bloke Show.
We talk about a whole variety of topics like comics, cartoons, movies, television, and sports.
And we're often joined by guests like Deck from Ireland and other friends from all over this wonderful planet.
Once a month, we jump into the DeLorean and take a look at the history of professional wrestling.
And once a month, we look back at actual history with TWiT, This Week in Time.
And once a month, we talk about whatever the fuck we want to talk about.
So please follow us on Twitter at TBSPOD.
And talk to us in the Facebook group, The Bloke Show.
Now, I don't give a fuck what you cunts do. Just listen to this fucking thing.
Atomic Thieves, Podcasting Network.
Hey, it's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Ray from the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. When you're done with our show, head over to the Shining Wizards Network, shiningwizardsnetwork.com, home to many great shows covering a variety of topics, including pop culture, heavy metal, music, sports, television, movies, and, of course, wrestling. Shows like The Fallen Angels, Stickman and Apex Radio, The Wolfman Jack Foley, Just Incredible's Pro Wrestling 101, The Midnight Jury, Two and a Half Wrestlers, of course, us, the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, The Neckbreaker Podcast, and, of course, The Shining Wizards. So what are you waiting for? Go to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com right now. Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here. As soon as you're done with the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, head over to rantemradio.com. That's right, rantemradio.com. We got you covered all week. You got the rant live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. You got the Turnbuckle Throwbacks every Wednesday at 9 p.m. You have the wrestling call-in show every Saturday at 11 p.m. And on Sundays, it's What Are You Reading with the Surfer at 6 p.m. It's the opinions you love, the history you crave. It's Rant EM Radio.
Great song about the Turner Network.
Speaking of TNT, I want to wish one of my best friends in the whole wide world a very happy birthday tomorrow, Mr. Christopher Esposito of Tattoos and Touchdowns. Him and my boy Will Sweeney, every Sunday, 10 to noon on morelikeradio.com. I actually filled in last week for Will, and it was good to be back in the studio with the old man and kicking shit around and talking about football and of course, plugging our show and doing some silly stuff. So, happy birthday, Chris. I love you. I'll see you
next time. Feliz cumpleaños.
Senor Espo.
Espo.
That's right. That's right.
I was about to say, Mr. Senor Estevez. I'm sure that guy's got a birthday coming up soon.
Who, Emilio?
Emilio, and there's Joe Estevez.
Fucking nut.
I'm a bigger Joe Estevez fan. He was pretty good in Soul Taker.
All right. So we're back, ladies and gentlemen, as you can hear. That was actually Anthrax doing AC/DC. I thought it was a good
That was Anthrax?
Yeah, Anthrax did a cover album a couple months. They do, it's pretty good. You didn't like it?
Yeah. I like them better when they're Anthrax.
They are Anthrax. That was actually the original singer too, Joey Belladonna.
No, it wasn't John Bush.
No, I love John Bush, dude. I saw them in concert like 15 years ago. I didn't like Ahmed Saint. Not a big fan of Ahmed Saint, but John Bush did very well with them, man. I thought
he was a good Anthrax singer. I enjoyed him. I can't say that I'm the biggest Joey Belladonna fan, but they had all their classic hits.
Yeah,
Caught in the Mosh.
Caught in the Mosh.
Joey Belladonna.
Yeah, come on, dude. I am the law. I am the law.
Well, when I got into them, I got into them when John Bush was around, and I remember seeing them.
Oh, Potter's Field only. Room for One More, their last album with him, You Can't Kill What Doesn't Die. That's a great song. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I got to see Anthrax with John Bush with Motorhead. That was my first Motorhead show. And my first Anthrax show, too.
The Ace of Spades. Love me some Motorhead. I saw Motorhead in 2005. My last Motorhead show was with, rest in peace, Ronnie Dio opened for them. It was Dio, Motorhead, and Iron Maiden at Jones Beach.
Wow.
Yeah, dude. Judas Priest was coming out with some new shit. I'm stoked, man. Good metal coming out soon, man. Lots of good metal. I'm very stoked. New Slayer, nice. New Slayer coming out. Metallica's going back into the studio. If you're a metalhead, I was a closet metalhead because I used to love hip-hop. I love hip-hop. And when I was a kid, it's a quick story, I used to keep a shoebox full of metal tapes in my room. But I wouldn't show any of my friends because they were all hip-hop heads. And it was like, I didn't want to get picked on. You know, I was a kid. I didn't know any better. I was barely a teenager. Cousin comes over to the house one night, and he pulls out under my bed. He sees he thought it was a pair of sneakers. Oh, you got a new pair of kicks? Opens the box, and it's like cassette tapes like Zeppelin and you know, Metallica and Maiden and Kiss. And
that's when you started crying?
No, he was like, what the fuck? And I'm like, dude, I said,
who gave you these?
And then all of a sudden, I go to his house, and he's got vinyl. So he's always like, you know, everybody listened to it but didn't say anything. I was like, you know, you didn't want to be the one guy getting pointed out. You know, I was 12 years old. You know, what the hell do I know?
Yeah.
All right. So we got a kick-ass throwback for you. But before we get into the throwback, I just want to do a history. Now, we've been talking about the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express for, you know, a minute. And there's a history, a huge history with these two teams before they even had a feud. Bobby Eaton was sent to Mid-South to work for Bill Watts, as you know, when they traded talent.
Yeah.
He would be part of the new version of the Midnight Express because then it was Dennis Condrey and somebody else. I forgot the other guy's name already.
It was Ravishing Randy Rose, and there was also
Norvell. Yeah, it was Randy Rose, Dennis Condrey.
Norville Austin.
Norville Austin, right. Okay, so now what happens is guys get swapped out all the time. We mentioned this almost every podcast. We talk about the Mid-Atlantic and Mid-South and everything.
Yeah.
Bobby Eaton gets sent there to be the new version. Eaton teamed with his former rival, which was Dennis Condrey. Of course, obviously under Jim Cornette, to form the new version of the Midnight Express. The Midnight Express had, up until this point, we just mentioned, a group of wrestlers. But once Eaton and Condrey got together, they were exclusive. Obviously, to compliment Lover Boy, Dennis, they nicknamed Eaton Beautiful Bobby.
Yeah, because he's so beautiful.
He's handsome. The Express
was handsome devil.
Right. As Dave and I mentioned before, the Express were first booked in an angle with Mid-South Tag Team Champions Magnum T8 and Mr. Wrestling 2. The highlight of the angle saw Eaton and Condrey tarring and feathering Magnum TA. I wish I could fucking find that, man. They tar and feather Magnum TA. Think about this.
I was about to say, isn't that on the Blu-ray? But I think that's where in Junkyard Dog got tarred and
feathered. It was Junkyard Dog. It wasn't Magnum TA.
Yeah.
That's on the Mid-South, right? You said?
Yeah.
You're bringing that back to me soon. I want to watch that again.
Yeah, next week.
Oh, yeah. You're going to be... Oh, that's right. You're in studio next week.
Yes.
Nice. Mega Powers in studio. All right.
Live and in living color.
Live and living color, if you will.
The flesh, baby.
They're right there, Thunder Lips.
All right.
So the Express win their first tag team championship when Mr. Wrestling 2 turns on Magnum TA.
Yeah.
Attacked him during a match, allowing Eaton and Condrey to walk away with the titles without much opposition. So, obviously, Magnum TA and Mr. Wrestling 2 split up. The Express need a new team. Who do they fight? The newly formed Rock and Roll Express. Now, Rock and Roll Express were two journeymen, Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson. Weren't going anywhere. They, like Dave mentioned, had a long-running feud. This is going from the mid-80s to the early 90s. Through several promotions.
No, not just then, but they had rematches in late 2000s.
Yeah, but it wasn't... I mean, when they were good up into the 90s.
Well, who's to say that those matches weren't good?
I'm talking about, like, it's totally different. I mean, I'm not saying they would. I mean, you lose a couple of steps. I don't give a shit. you know, how, you know, how great you are, you know. Even when they fought the Briscoes, they lost a couple. They were good, but they lost a couple steps. They're old men, you know. The two Expresses had some fantastic matches. And they differed so much from other tag team wrestling because at the time it gathered a lot of attention locally, nationally. And you know what? The teams, I mean, from 84, when the Midnight Express left the promotion to work somewhere else, and they had a series of matches with the Rock and Roll Express that were well received from independent wrestling promotions all over the world.
Yeah.
And Dave mentioned it spans 20 years. 20 years! This feud went 20 years. As bad
20
as
a, years of the same match.
Right, but you know what?
And it was all great.
Right. The Midnight Express, go to World Class for a minute in Texas, where they feud with one of my favorite teams, the Fan... Wait, let me get my fucking... My sound effects. Tommy Rogers, Bobby Fulton, the Fantastics. Okay. Anyway. They feud with the Fantastics, and of course now they're looking to go somewhere else that would give them some national and international exposure. In 85, Eaton, Condrey, and Cornette signed with JCP, Jim Crockett Promotions. Were exposed on a national level, obviously due to television, Superstation, all that nonsense.
Guess who was there waiting for him?
The Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah.
Right. So, now, which leads us up to February 21st, 1986. The current champions, the Rock and Roll Express versus Eaton and Condrey. Now, my favorite version of the Midnight Express will be Stan Lee and Bobby Eaton, hands down. That was... like my first exposure to the long run of this feud. I didn't get to see any of this stuff until later on in my life.
Plus, they were together a lot longer. Sweet Stan Lane and Beautiful Bobby.
Right, because then they, you know, again, Dennis Condrey left, swapping them out, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So let's get right into it.
And now, here is your throwback of the week, sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio.
All right. So, Dave, you want to start this off?
Yeah, let's start this off. This is the... big match between the Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express. Match starts off with them with the champs, the Rock and Roll Express, disrobing, and they get fucking jumped as soon as the bell hits by the Midnight Express. And these boys, they get right back at them. They get thrown on the outside. Rock and Roll Express retaliates, throwing a friggin'... I was about to say Randy Rose, but it's...
No,
it's...
Ricky Morton gets tossed out. Robert Gibson gets tossed out. Now they double-team Ricky... I'm sorry. Robert Gibson gets tossed out. Ricky Morton gets double-teamed.
Condrey and Eaton.
Okay, Condrey, Eaton, double-team Ricky Morton.
Double atomic drops, getting smacked into each other. Pandemonium chaos. And the match hasn't even started yet. Hardly started.
No, they don't even have their gear off at this point. They hot shot Robert Gibson back in the ring. And I tell you, as much as I love Stan Lee, Dennis Condrey, way better wrestler.
Yeah.
Way better wrestler. Really didn't cut a good promo. But again.
Well, neither guy really.
Well, Bobby Eaton didn't talk at all, but Dennis Condrey, the couple of promos, it's just, you know, it was apples and oranges. Jimmy Cornette was the mouthpiece. But you could tell. Pee Wee Anderson was the referee for this match. And for the first 2 minutes of the match, the guys still got the Rock and Roll Express still have their ring gear on.
Yeah.
Fast forward about
their friggin' t-shirt with the handkerchiefs tied around their arms and all that shit.
What I like about, if you go about 6-7 minutes in, the Midnight Express cut the ring off with submission holds. Like, you know, like sleeper holds and, you know, arm bars, leg locks, and then he just, you know, do the whole work on the one part of the anatomy.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was, you know, solid. Am I missing anything? Am I skipping ahead? You got any notes or?
The one thing that I did have written down was the backdrop that beautiful Bobby received by Ricky onto the concrete.
Oh, yeah.
Which was just sickening, since this was a point in time where there were no mats.
I'm glad you brought that up. Because,
around ringside.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. Beautiful Bobby, even in his single run, when he was TV champion for a while, I believe, he took serious bumps. With the they had a bunch of scaffold matches too.
They had two notable ones: one with the Rock and Roll Express, and one with the Road Warriors.
With the Road Warriors, right? But they took bumps. I mean, Bobby Eaton took bumps. He was the catalyst of this. I was about to say band. We'll talk about music before. He was the catalyst of this group, hands down.
Yeah,
you know, taking nothing away from his tag team partners, who were all fantastic.
Oh, and I'm watching that backdrop right now. It's gross.
Yeah, yeah.
Ruining that beautiful body on beautiful Bobby.
He is handsome. But I, you know, Dave mentioned before about the art, the lost art of tag team wrestling, and the last couple of weeks we've brought to you teams like, you know, the Road Warriors and the Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express and, you know, Ricky Steamboat, Jay Youngblood, Slaughter and Canoodle. These were tag teams. This is the pinnacle of tag team wrestling, the golden era, from 1984 to about 1990, maybe 5 or 4 maybe?
Maybe 94.
Maybe 94.
95 was a strange time. WCW was doing great in 95.
Of course. But they had Hogan at that point for a year. But
they had Hogan, Luger was coming in. I think Nitro started
in September of 95, yeah.
Yeah, they had Flying Brian, they had Liger, they had Mysterio coming in.
Yeah, they had the Cruiserweights, they had the Mexicans coming in from Conan, all the Conan's guys. They had all the ECW guys, '96, that Psicosis, Rey Mysterio, like Dave mentioned, La Parca.
Steiners.
The Steiner brothers were a staple there for a hot minute. Harlem Heat, can't forget Harlem Heat.
Yep.
But after that, it becomes a different time. So, you know, if you guys...
It changed drastically in a very short time.
Exactly. So for you younger fans who listen to the show, do yourselves a credit and watch the stuff that not only Dave and I put on, but stuff that we've mentioned in previous shows. I think you guys will be really surprised and pleasantly surprised. I can't even talk tonight. I got fucking Bowmanism tonight.
Presently supplied.
Yeah. You know, you'll be surprised on how, you know, the evolution of the tag team evolved at that time.
Yeah.
Because
there were even, there was like a two offhand that I recall, like two WCW pay-per-views where they solely dedicated them to tag team tournaments. One was absolute garbage, but one was like phenomenal. The one for the NWA World Tag Team Championship.
By the way, I love Jimmy Cornette's tuxedo, the red tuxedo with the bow tie.
Oh, he's always dressed to impress.
No, dude, that's awesome. He's such a fucking heel. Loved it.
It's like his fucking mom dressed him up. And so I think on Austin's podcast, he went into how he had to get something to stand out as a heel manager. And he ended up going to some like Kmart or... you know, Target, and just bought the ugliest shit that he could find.
So I'm about 12 and a half minutes into the match, and the challengers are just, you know, utilizing the hot tag, getting in and out, working over Ricky Morton at this point.
Yeah.
And they do a really good job. It was so... They worked so well together that it lasted that long because they knew each other. You know what I'm saying? Like, it flowed.
They spent all their time together. They, when they're on the road, they're together. In the car, together. Hotel, together. Everything. One thing that's popping out for me before we get to the 12-minute mark was that they're the Rock and Roll Express, they're constantly working the leg of Condrey. And there's one bit in the match that just had me laughing, and it made sense too, which you don't really I just never saw this during a tag team match, you know, or even a singles match. Well, maybe for Rick Rude. I saw it with Rude. Rude would do this quite a bit. But they were working that leg of Condry. And there's one point where he hits Gibson with a knee lift, or a knee to the gut, rather. And Condry falls to the ground because that was the knee that they've been working on the entire match. And he had to use that particular knee to drive it into the guts of Gibson. And he just crumbles to the mat. And it's just like, wow, that's – he's selling it.
Sold it well.
Yeah, just like – again, like it's – you know, I'm really loving Tag Team Month, as you could tell.
Of course.
Just seeing stuff that makes sense. just really – I love it.
There's so many matches that Dave and I – these are not the only matches of these teams. There's so – listen, you type in these – I mean, I'm actually – I was going to play – there's a two-minute clip online at the WWE. Like, I think – I don't know if it was – not the network, but it was like on demand or a DVD or something.
At the YouTube.
Yeah, but it's on a YouTube clip, but they talk about the feud. It's like a two-minute clip. I'm going to play it. And it goes in length about them – and how it evolved, and you know, a little bit of better perspective because these guys were there and we weren't.
Yeah.
So, but let's see. I actually can play the end of this match. Let's see here. All right, so let's go about 13.5, and now the Rock and Roll Express have the upper hand. So let's take you now to the match, February 21st, 1986. And let's see what goes on.
He takes Bobby, comes in.
Tony Schiavone and David Crockett on.
Roberts got hit. Oh, yeah, you can tell it's David Crockett from all that yelling.
Now we got him all four in there. They're taking him.
All four guys.
Drop kick.
Double drop kick. Referee gets knocked over.
Hit Pee-wee Anderson.
Double drop kick now on Bobby Eaton.
Thanks,
David Crockett's selling it like it's a heart attack.
Yep. Slingshots Cornette in the ring. Corny did take bumps, Mr. X, absolutely.
3 minutes remaining.
Condry with the tennis racket on Ricky Morton.
So it was a big line of David Crockett. Look at him.
I love David Crockett. He's so fucking biased. He never rooted for the bad guys ever.
No, he was a face announcer. He had to maintain face. And Schiavone was kind of like, you know, he was
the unbiased, the neutral guy.
He was neutral.
No, no.
It's like somebody told, like, somebody never told David Crockett that wrestling was fake.
Still real to me, damn it. All right. So I'm going to play this clip real quick, and then we'll give you a better perspective of the Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express. Yeah. Hopefully, I'll make sure there's no fucking advertisements. Okay, here you go.
I have never seen in my years in the business a greater tag team rivalry than the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express.
It was a great rivalry because those guys were all great workers.
These are two of the absolute finest tag teams in professional wrestling today.
Rock and Roll Express, you took two journeymen, Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson, who were unbelievable talents, put them together, and off and running they were.
Oh, I'm telling you, the crowd loves them. The crowd loves them. Standing ovations. These guys are exciting.
Every teenage girl in the building just is madly in love with, you know, two good-looking guys, and you know, they could go out there and sell and sell and sell and then make these great big fiery comebacks and endear the people.
Ricky and Robert were great foils for Dennis and Bobby in the Midnight Express.
I'm going to introduce to you now the men who will roll over the Rock and Rollers, Loverboy Dennis and beautiful Bobby, the Midnight Express.
You got two old country boys that everybody want to hate.
Midnight Express, so methodical. They're almost mechanical in their movement. No wasted motion whatsoever.
They had great, great ring timing, and they were in great shape, and they had great ring psychology.
Their matches were not to be believed. their matches and the way they drew were pretty special at the time.
There it is, Saturday, June 16th, Louisiana Superdome, a match that everybody's been waiting for.
We main evented the Superdome, drew almost 25,000 people. And thank God I'm nearsighted and the lights were down, because if I'd have gone out in that ring and seen all those people, I believe I'd have either fainted or had a heart attack, one or the other. But that early in my career, that was something big.
Every time we had these guys in a match, Jimmy Cornette always found out a way to get in to interfere. This will be the first time in history, Jimmy Cornette, that a tag team match is going to be on top of a scaffold.
They had some unbelievable, what they call the scaffold matches. Those are the first guys, I think, that ever did those. And they were just, they were unreal.
They had the most natural, amazing chemistry that I have ever witnessed.
That was a match made in heaven. And these guys took that match and that rivalry all around, and it was successful everywhere.
I have never seen in my
no,
years...
No, shut up. Damn it.
You know, I take offense to, was it Ted DiBiase saying that these guys were attractive? There was not a single attractive man in that ring.
I got to tell you, though, dude, speaking of mullets... The Rock and Roll Express had the crazy mullets with the bandanas on the knees, and they dressed like rockers, you know?
Well, that's where the rockers got their look from.
Pretty much. Revolution.
Come on, like, nobody in that ring was attractive. Maybe down south, they're, you know, they're into that kind of stuff, but, you know, Robert Gibson was looking, his eyes were looking in two different directions. Ricky Morton looked half retarded.
Nah,
Dennis Condrey looked like a frigging garden gnome or Gwildor from Masters of the Universe, and beautiful Bobby. Oh my God,
dude, they got more ass than Greyhound, man. Those guys,
yeah, they did. Isn't there like so? I remember a friend of mine was telling me there's some like stories about Ricky Morton taking a 16-year-old to his van outside of a wrestling show recently.
Yeah. You know what? They were on. I just pulled out. I got three or four magazines from the mid-80s. And they're all over the place, the Rock and Roll Express. They were so popular, you know, that anywhere they went, they drew. You know, between World Class, Mid-South, Jim Crockett. And like you mentioned, into the 90s and 2000s, they were fucking amazing on the independents. And then we saw them last year against the Briscoes, and he was still... And then when I met him at Legends of the Ring, I took a picture with them. You know, nice guys. I mean, and you know what? Genuinely, just sound in the ring. The hot tag is surely missed, especially with us, especially with me.
Yeah.
I'm a tag team guy. I based everything... When I was a kid, I wanted to be in a tag team. Every time I played with my figures, I had tag teams. I have all my favorite guys came from tag teams. So, you know, between Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, Paul Orndorff, the Road Warriors, Bruiser Brody, all those guys are all, you know, Bobby Eaton, they're all tag team wrestlers, you know, so.
Yeah.
So that's
born and bred tag team wrestlers.
You know, it's the lost art of the hot tag. And I'm just glad that we can at least find
even
some of the stuff.
Cutting the ring in half. Like, how often do you see guys, like, keep a guy at their half of the ring? Like,
well, opponent? You know what? It's funny because when I was talking to Mike Norengong yesterday on Facebook about the whole nonsense with McMahon, you know, Mike mentioned that, you know, WWE, they're so saturated with programming that's probably part of the reason why you don't see the tag team continent anymore, because they're time constrained. You know, back then you had tag team matches 10, 12, 15 minutes long, sometimes 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That built storylines and were intriguing. You're not gonna hold a newer wrestling fan's interest for more than 10 minutes with a tag team match anymore.
Yeah. When, especially nowadays, a lot of singles matches are only 5 or 6 minutes long. And a lot of guys have problems with just trying to figure out how to have a match in 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 6 minutes, you know?
Which is why I like, you know, Ring of Honor and, you know, PWS and Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and Chikara, because they feature tag teams. and they promote tag team wrestling, and they sometimes they have matches more than 10 minutes, and it you know, even though they kick out of 1,700 deadly finishes, it keeps your interest to an extent.
Yeah.
And it's surely missed. It really is. I don't know what else to say about it. You know, you have any other notes? I don't have any other notes on it.
No, that's all I have for now.
You want to take a few calls before we wrap it up?
Yeah, if there's some people that want to call in, let's get some perspectives on what they think about tag team wrestling and about this match in particular.
Yeah, you guys
want this feud in particular.
Yeah, you guys want to call in 718-878-6394, 718-878-6394. We'll talk to you for a few minutes before we wrap it up. But you know what? I think with proper booking, you can keep an interest. I just don't know why they won't. I think they're afraid to do it. You know, and there's just so much talent. There's so much. The talent is at times
better.
Yeah, it's better than what it was back in the day with some of these guys.
Yeah, these guys can sustain, you know, so much more punishment. They can do so many more things that people can't do. Scott wants to know the number.
718-878-6394. Let me put it in the chat room. Unless you were doing it, 718-878-6394.
Yeah, so I don't think there's really like an excuse as to why wrestling isn't, you know, as great as it could be. You know,
yeah,
doesn't matter if it's WWE, doesn't matter if it's TNA or ROH or whatever. You know,
hold on.
And TNA, there's just plenty of great wrestling on there.
I don't know.
Got a call.
I don't know. Turnbuckle Throwbacks. What's your name? Where you from?
Scott. That's even a number, man.
Scott! What's going on, brother?
What's up, dude?
Not much. How you guys been?
You know, hanging and banging. Talking about some old school wrestling like we always do at this time every week.
You know what my favorite tag team match of all time is?
What's that?
The 20-man tag elimination match of Survivor Series.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
You know,
I love that match.
it's
which year? 87 or 88?
88 was the 20-man, wasn't it?
Oh, it was both.
No.
The first couple had a lot of them in there.
Scott, you mean the one with the Conquistadors and the Prowlers of Pain with Fuji?
So these were in there, the British Bulldogs.
Right, that was the one where Fuji
that was,
turned on...
when 87.
Fuji, yeah, Fuji turned on Demolition, right? Is that the one?
I believe that was the one. I haven't watched it in a while, but I've always loved that match. Whenever I had the chance, I would go watch it. I got the network here, and I still haven't watched it.
My favorite one of my favorite tag team matches besides that was another Midnight Express match when they fought the Road Warriors. And I think I talked about this a few weeks ago. The Road Warriors turned heel at this point. This is before they – right before
that
they –
last week.
Right, before they jumped Dusty, they won the titles. But they
beat the fuck out of
the Midnight Express. Like, dude, it was so bad. They had to you know, blur out the blood That's how Dusty got fired because Turner did not want blood on TV.
No, that was from the spike to the eye. But
right, he didn't want blood on TV.
Midnight Express tag match was just like a beatdown.
Right, but he didn't want blood on TV. Period. So they didn't, and I guess you know Dusty took it too far to the well. But I don't know. But yeah, you know, tag team wrestling's a lost art form, man. It's just not there.
I wish they would build it. Every time you think that WWE is going to go good with a tag team division, they just drop it and break everybody up.
And that's why I hope they expand NXT a bit. I mean, they did by giving NXT separate titles. But you know, you're going to build these guys. If you're going to bring guys up. Like, they have a couple of tag teams now down there. You're going to bring them up, at least, you know, keep it and keep it good. Because, you know, you can build off tag team. You can build legit storylines. The problem
Yeah, I mean, I think the Ascension is a great tag team.
But they don't really have any competition in this.
They don't have any competition, A. And B, I got to be honest with you. I'm not that sold on these guys. I mean, they're okay. But, you know... They got
a bootleg Eliminators finisher. So.
Yeah, that kind of pisses me off, though. I know Imitation's the best form of
flattery.
No, imitation's the best form of flattery, but it's at least do
it's
it
not
good.
Like the real thing.
It's not at least do it well.
Ain't nothing like the real thing, baby.
No, it's not. But if you're gonna do something, like that, then at least pull it off.
Yeah, it looks bad when they do it, but I think they could be. They should bring them up. I mean, you got the Wyatts. You could have them. You got the Usos. I mean, like you said, I like Heath Slater. Like, I think he's a gamer. He's up for anything. I mean, I don't know, half the people that I know wouldn't put up with the shit that they put him through. But, yeah, he's a gamer. I mean, I thought him and Gabriel were a good tag team when they were together.
I thought so, too. I dug that NXT thing for a while. Yeah, I even dug Punk's Straight Edge Society when he had Doc Gallows and Joey Mercury and, you know, you had glimpse of tag teams, like you mentioned, but it's just, you know, you can't keep the interest for a new fight. Even my kid, man, my kid's smarter than the average wrestling fan because he lives with me. But, right. You know, even, like, him and his little friends, like my nephew's 11, he gets it, but, like, he has to watch the Hardy Boys and the Dudleys, and he's got to watch those matches, Edge and Christian, because he loses interest when there's tag teams now, you know?
Yeah, it's just makeshift tag teams, and that's why Kofi Kingston hasn't been on TV, because there's nobody to tag him with.
There's not much conviction behind the teams. Like, it's not really guys that want to stick together.
I mean, you could build shit with the Usos, man. They're tight. You can even make them a heel team. They could be the next Samoan SWAT team. You know what I'm saying? You can do that. You can build on that, you know? You could make Rollins and it. You can, you know, when they push Roman Reigns to the moon, you could still make Rollins and Ambrose a tag team, you know?
Yeah, you can, and that would be a freaking great tag team.
I just, again, for me, it's just a lost art form, and it's not where it was, where it should be. And like we mentioned before, you called in. There's so much talent. Like I can tell you right now, if you like in Ring of Honor. You got guys like Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly. You could build them as singles guys after they split the tag teams up. A lot of guys, I mean, all the guys did it, man. I don't understand why they still don't do that.
They need to. Yeah. A tag team wrestling, I mean, you get more guys on TV. You have a lot better, you know. And there's another thing. I was listening to the match, and, you know, there were like 3 minutes left in the match. You need more time limit draws because that builds the feud.
Of course.
You can't beat me. I can't beat you. And none of this double disqualification, double count out, throw out shit. Time limit draws is where it's at.
It made you want to watch the next week.
Yeah, because you couldn't figure out who the hell was better than the other guy, you know?
Yeah.
Again, like what I said earlier, it's, you know, before when we watched it, it was more of a contest, you know, who was going to one-up the other guy. Now it's just kind of like, oh, well, we're just going to have a match. That's it. And there's no consequences to the loser, and there's no reward for the winner.
Right, and think about it. You remember the, you know, a lot of the times you had World Class, NWA, they all stopped with the with TV time remaining, and like they would fight right until the show ended. Join us next week for the you know whatever
conclusion of the match.
All right, Scotty, we're gonna let you go. And
all right, man.
All right, brother, and good talking to you, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, man. I'll see you guys on the board.
Take care, brother.
Thanks for calling, Scott.
All right.
Later.
Turnbuckle Throwbacks, what's your name, where you from? Hello?
Yes, hello. Is this Turnbuckle Throwbacks? Sorry, man.
Yeah, how are you? What's your name, where you from?
Oh, yeah, sorry. This is Shane from the Facebook page. Sorry about that.
Shane, what's going on, man?
What's up, Shane?
Not too much, man. Just, you know, getting ready for playoffs for the NBA. So, watching that game on Saturday, hopefully. But,
yeah, you're a big Spurs fan, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm from New York, so due to the Army and my dad being in the military, you know, kind of, you know, Army brat and stuff like that. So, it was always, you know. Different, so, but on the good side, you know, you guys are on tonight, so you know, Midnight Express were one of the greatest, man, so they're just you know, so
Yeah, Midnight Express are one of the best teams ever. They
What's your favorite Midnight Express match, Shane?
Hands down, it has to be the scaffold. I know it's so fucked up, but
Which scaffold match was it? Was it the one with the Road Warriors, or was it the one with
That's the one where Cornette broke his legs.
Blew his knees out. Yeah, Bubba was supposed to catch him, and he didn't catch him. Yeah, man. The best part of that was the Road Warriors cut a promo on a scaffold, and they threw pumpkins off the scaffold, and this is beautiful. This is going to be your face, beautiful Bobby. And he threw the pumpkin off, and this is going to be you, Stan Lane, and you, Jim Cornette. It doesn't get any better than that. The scaffold matches, truth be told, from what I read and from what I saw on interviews, they were scared to death about doing that shit, man, because there's not much room up there to maneuver, you know?
Oh, yeah, I mean. And Jim Cornette's a big dude. So that's why I'm like, I always thought that was like, you know, hindsight should be 20/20. Your big ass really shouldn't be up there. You know what I mean? In the first place. So, I mean, I don't know. But I think at the same time, there was that extra factor of it being, you know, whoa, you know, this is some serious stuff, you know? With that value of it being, you know, almost not necessarily a common thing that you would see in, you know, Southern style wrestling or, you know, anything like that, I just think it lives to tell the tale, you know? So, but.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anything else, brother, before we let you go? Because we're going to wrap this up soon.
I just want to say I'm a big fan of you guys. I first heard about, you know, guys' podcast through Don and Kev, you know, Don Tony, Kevin Castle. And I just, you know, love your guys' opinions, you know, opinions you crave and everything like that. So all that stuff. So appreciate it. And hope you guys have a good night and safe week.
Thanks for calling in, Shane.
Dude, thank you, Shane. We appreciate the support.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No problem. Take care, guys.
You're the man, brother. Take care.
Yeah.
All right. Shane checking in. New York, Texas, Virginia tonight.
All around the country.
That's right. We're making moves, Mega Powers. We're making moves. We're making moves. All right. So let's talk about next week before we start wrapping this up. Next week is our we're going to end our little showcase, the tag team wrestling, with one of my favorite feuds of all time, which is Devon Erichs and the Freebirds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have three matches I have picked. I don't know which one I want to use yet. So, you know, get active on the Facebook page, guys. Let's talk about that. That's going to be great. We actually started a message board, just in case you guys, because I know a lot of conversations get lost in translation on Facebook. So if you guys want to join, I put the link up on the Facebook page. Join the Pro Boards, and, you know, once we get that active, we can start mediating it and, you know, get show ideas and, you know, just, you know, opinions. And, you know, you guys want, if you don't want to talk in the chat room, you don't want to talk on Facebook, you don't want to email us, go on the Pro Boys. We'll use the Pro Boys. We'll check it out. Just another outlet for you guys to get in touch with us, because everybody has an opinion, and we appreciate all the support and opinions of, you know, good or bad of the show. So
it may be easier to find conversations than Facebook.
Right, because, you know, again, our admins are a bit scarce lately. So, guys, if you want to be an admin and you're not on the East Coast, let me know. If you're not in this time zone, let me know. We need some more admins on the page, because Dave and I are just racked up at work right now, and trying to do work and life and doing a show is a little bit hectic. So that's why we're not posting as much as we should be. But
when I can post, it's kind of like just quick replies and then back to work.
Yeah, but we are getting some love on the Facebook. We appreciate it. And again, you guys rock. Yeah. All right. So what's in the chat? Yeah, Mav. I'll go on the Facebook page, Maverick, and I'll make you an admin if you want to post some stuff on there for me. I appreciate it. Everybody. Yeah. So yeah, I'll post it. Everything's good. We'll post all the stuff on there for the Pro Boards and. We'll post tonight's match on there, and I'll get the show up as soon as possible. So let's start wrapping this up, man.
Let's wrap it up in a nice
finally presented packaging for everybody to listen to tomorrow who didn't get to listen to now.
Yeah, yeah. So, of course, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Oh, just a quick note. I purchased the domain name, turnbucklethrowbacks.com.
Oh.
So once we get the money up for a host and a server.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's not that much money. I was talking to Tony Z from the Wizards call me the other night.
And
I bought it, and I own it. So we're going to be – TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com will be here by the summer. I can guarantee it. You excited?
Oh, am I excited.
There you go. All right. So Facebook.com/TurnbuckleThrowbacks. We're on the tweet machine. 400 followers on Twitter at TBuckleTBacks.
Good God.
Good God. You want to email us, TurnbuckleThrowbacks1@gmail.com. Of course, we're a Shining Wizards Network production. Check out the Shining Wizards, Midnight Jury, the Neckbreaker Guys, Two and a Half Wrestlers, Apex Radio, Just Incredibles Pro 101. We're on the Rant. Of course, Rant every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Us at obviously at 9 p.m. every Wednesday night. The Wrestling Call-In Show, Mr. Will I Am Morgan at 11 p.m. on Saturdays. What Are You Reading with Surfer every Sunday at 6 p.m. Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle, Wrestling Soup, The Bloke Show, Mega Powers Radio, NXT Cast, Metal Thunder Radio, Tattoos and Touchdowns, The Ham Radio Show with Uncle Eddie and all those guys, and of course our buddy Justin, Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast. I played their bumper tonight. So shout out to Justin. He's doing big things. Good for him. They got a good show going on. So support all our people. Download all the shows. They're really good stuff.
It's like a week's worth of podcasts right there.
That's what
just these two networks alone.
Well, that's what I do. That's my shitty commute to work. That's exactly what I do. So that's it. We're going to wrap this up. Our song of the week is the Rock and Roll Express theme from WCW. So we'll play that out. And on behalf of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, I'm the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea. For Mega Powers, wishing you an adieu. And we'll see you guys next week. Same bad time, same bad channel.
Take it easy.
Sucks.